welcome everyone to this week's episode of Casting the Net. Today is the second episode in our two-part series where we have a chance to interview Father Dave and just get to know him a little bit better. So we hope you enjoy, and we'll see you again next week.
Hi, I'm Father Dave Nuss, together with Father of Four, Rick Lingva. Welcome to Casting the Net. We are in search for catching the faith.
Sure. But I'm a part of a couple of cohorts. I should share this. And while that may not involve weekly dinner or something like that, there's a group of younger, they're all younger priests than me. Mm-hmm. I'm the chaperone of the group. Like, you take your oldest out, you're the chaperone. I'm a chaperone. I shouldn't say that. I'm not. These are great priests. But all of them collectively, if we add up all of their years of ordination, I'm not sure they come to 31 that I have or about. And I was really an initiator with this because I felt several years ago the Spirit moving me in a retreat that I needed to be more assertive with making some connections. And I really felt that the Spirit spoke to me that I needed to make some connections generationally, that I need to both connect with some younger guys because I could bring some perspective of experience and persevering through difficulties. Yeah. And at the same time, I don't know what it's like today starting out.
Yeah.
Or first-time pastor.
See, I would imagine it's got to be difficult, you know, and whenever I hear about a young priest that, yeah, you know, just got ordained and, you know, he's entering the priesthood, I often think that's got to be such a difficult thing in today's world comparative to 20, 30, 40, 50, you know, years ago, just because of all the things that are out there today with, you know, social media and influence and having to act a certain way and peer pressure. I mean, it has to be so difficult. So I think it's really neat that you put yourself out there as sort of that mentor to some of these priests. And it's really great that you started that.
And let me also share that I get a lot of benefit from it. So don't give me too much credit here, because I really feel the Spirit moved and I just responded with some openness from some other younger priests. And to hear some of their concerns, to be able to share some situations, to share some best practices, to hear some best practices from them, it's good. It gives me hope. I mean, these are some good guys, you know. Yeah, and there's another cohort of priests that I'm with, which was my initiative as well, but they represent different dioceses. And in Lent, for example, actually we started before Lent, we did this initiative called Exodus 90 together. So every single week we Zoomed for, I guess it's 90 days. So for 8 weeks or 9 weeks, we Zoomed together for an hour. And part of that was prayer. Part of that was accountability in terms of sharing. Are we doing what we said we would be doing? Where do we fall short of that? So we could encourage brothers together. But outside of that experience, we still connect regularly, usually via Zoom. Sometimes we meet in South Bend, which is it gives me kind of a retreat day, a day to unplug. And it's a convenient place for men from Chicago and Fort Wayne and South Bend. And it's an opportunity that's more about the sharing of the challenges that we have as pastors uniquely, typically. Yeah. And assistance and encouragement on personnel issues, financial issues, school opportunities, faith formation, retreat experiences, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Where do you go to even ask these questions? And then what are the reliable sources to be able to glean best ideas?
Yeah, no, that's interesting, because I think a lot of us think, oh, you already have all this at your disposal. You know, you already have a game plan. You've already got a manual that you follow, you know, for all these different things. And it's interesting to me that, no, not really, you know, and you have to sort of do these things on your own. And you know, through these types of events and talking to these other priests, I think that's it's interesting and it's fascinating to me that you have to be as proactive as you do to do that, you know, on top of everything else you have to do.
We're not assigned to anything.
Yeah.
We're not required. I go back to require means that your consequences are given to you when you don't do it. There's
sure.
That doesn't exist. That might be disappointing to someone here, but it doesn't exist. It does take a deep commitment to want to get better, to trust that the Lord is going to make those provisions for how we might grow stronger in our faith, our hope, our love, how we might become better leaders and more effective leaders, how we might learn new ways to communicate, how we might preach more effectively. I mean, these are all aspects of what we do professionally. At least to me, I'm given a gift of wanting to be better because I realize that I can be better. And so I want to connect with others who can help me to do that.
And I'm gonna tap the microphone here so I know to take this out if you want me to remove this. But I'm curious, though. You said something. So what are consequences, right? So when you do something that, say, the bishop or you know, whoever it might be, doesn't approve of, right?
Sure.
What are consequences for your actions that something that you might do that's unfavorable?
As a pastor, I'm privileged to be able to serve because the bishop in his graciousness makes that possible. Mm-hmm. So I am appropriately and fittingly accountable to my bishop. That's kind of how the org chart works for priests. For someone in a religious community, they would be accountable to their religious superior. That's how that works.
Yep.
And there are certain policies and procedures that I have to follow both as a priest as well as a pastor in both those instances. With regard to being a priest, the administration of the sacraments must be done in a very specific way with regards to what's called form and matter. I have to say the exact words and do the exact things that the church says that I must do. I don't make them up. It's bread and it's wine and a certain kind of bread and a certain kind of wine. It's a certain kind of oil. It's a certain formula that's spoken. And if anyone were to deviate from that, they would understandably be asked to, the bishop would absolutely want to speak to them directly, first to tell me the facts, and two, we're going to remedy this because this isn't allowed.
Right.
Or someone that the bishop might deputize. I mean, there are some there's a priest who is sort of the delegate for the bishop himself, who enables the reach of the bishop to be broader with those of us who are on the ground. So absolutely, positively, as a pastor, there's certain policies and procedures. A school has to be run with certain rules and regs. Same with a parish, rules and regs. I'm an employer. There are rules and regs. Some of them are civil. Some of them are ecclesiastical. And they have to be followed. And if they're not, appropriately so, there will be consequences where there'll be intervention with proper authority. Yeah, you don't have to remove that. That's actually good to know for Catholics, that's baked into how we are, right? This isn't a local level where I get to put a shingle out and say, open for business, reverend, right? Without perhaps any credential other than what I have said, and with accountability to whom?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that's something that I think is a huge difference, you know, within the Catholic faith, is that you are accountable for those things.
Yeah.
And there is a certain way of doing things to make sure that they're done the right way.
Yeah, there's a specific authority that's given to me by the bishop to be able to practice as a priest. So when I go to another diocese, we just had a parish retreat in another diocese. It happened to be in the Diocese of Lansing, Michigan. And I had to contact my bishop's office to get documentation in the form of written credential to present to the bishop of the Diocese of Lansing for his office to be able to authenticate and give to the retreat center that we used in his diocese that I am who I claim to be.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And I want Catholics to hear that and to feel really empowered and confident that great efforts are made by our leaders to make sure that the priests are doing exactly what we are supposed to be doing and not renegade.
Right. No, that's important. That's a great point.
Yeah.
No, I think people will feel comforted by, you know, knowing that. So let's switch it up just a little bit. Do you have your sights set on a certain achievement within the diocese? You know, do you have a certain, is there something you want to attain within your career, so to speak, as a priest?
Well, salvation comes to mind.
Besides that.
Well, I am in it for that reason.
Yes, right. Okay. Let's just assume that one.
I can be the last one into purgatory. I'll take it. What a great question, right? Because in the world, at the youngest age, I wanted to win the conference, then win the district, and then win the region, and then win the state, right? There's this sort of progression that kind of gets baked into what's the next level? Mm-hmm. Well, one of the three promises that every priest makes is a promise of obedience, and obedere, the Latin, means to listen. And the one to whom we listen and ultimately submit in terms of their authority is the person of the bishop of, in my particular case, it's the Bishop of Toledo. So for me to operate, the bishop gives me the chance to do that, the privilege to do that. With that, I don't have to put together a resume. With that, I don't have to be job searching.
Sure.
With that, I don't have to be anxious about the next maybe career move, right? Mm-hmm. The concept is that I can surrender that sort of ambition to Jesus, the high priest, working through the bishop, trusting that my best interest and the best interest of the people is always at play within the bishop and his closest collaborators. So towards that end, no, I don't have an aspiration like, oh my gosh, if I could just get to this parish, or my gosh, if I could just be involved in this school or this ministry. And my career has been utterly, totally, and completely unconventional as my kind of priests go. Diocesan priests, is having served in multiple dioceses outside of the Diocese of Toledo, very unusual that that happens, one of which was in Europe. For a year in the Archdiocese of Cologne in Germany, as well as in Washington, D.C., actually serving there for and working for the Cardinal Archbishop of both places, both in Washington and Cologne.
Wow. Yeah. And that has to give you a very unique experience, you know, that you can take with you and you can, you know, learn from and apply to all sorts of different
pieces
of
perspective. But, go back to the obedience. It's not a blind obedience that I have a responsibility to inform the bishop with as clearly as I possibly can so that he can make the best decision. So I bear a responsibility to relay the facts for him, right? The bishop isn't disconnected from any one of us, but earnestly cares for us.
Yeah.
Towards that end, I'm not anxious about the next move or, oh, there's this window of opportunity. Oh, I've got to really kind of position myself or be seen. Or I'm really grateful that I'm freed from that, because I do believe that if the Lord didn't lead me into priesthood life and ministry, I mean, I think he saved me from myself. I really do. I think it was an act of mercy that God chose me to become a priest. It wasn't my idea. I think it was an act of mercy, because I'm so competitive by nature. I think I would have really had difficulties from ambition and aspiration for next level. I do.
Yeah. Interesting. So this can be our last question, because I know we're getting close to running out of time here. Sort of rewinding then.
Sure.
What brought you into the priesthood?
Well, it's God's idea. I like to say, because it's true, I didn't grow up playing priest. I grew up playing football, basketball, baseball. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it wasn't until my college years that I first had a significant religious awakening. It wasn't so much one identifiable encounter with Christ. It was encountering Christ over time and over different experiences, including the Mass and including the Sacrament of Reconciliation or Confession. That was just a part of my regular practice in college, and I thank God for giving me that desire and some other friends who similarly did that. Right, makes it easier. And from there, it just became more of a consideration not just of religious maturity, growing in practice and understanding of the faith as my faith, not as my parents' faith, but it became emergent to me and some other people saying to me, you know, you'd be good at this. Have you ever thought about this? Why don't you give it consideration? And for some closest friends and family to be very supportive of my going to the seminary when I did.
Wow.
Praise be God. Total act of mercy. God knew who I was without his grace. And just, I feel like he reached down and said, nope, I'm going to save you from some of your own ambitions and competitiveness and aspirational reach. And I'm going to let you wash feet.
Wow. That's amazing. No, that really is. Because I know, you know, we've heard stories from, you know, different homilies and things about how other priests, oh, I had a calling or this event happened in my life. And it really kind of drew me in at that point. And so for you, it sounds like it was a little more, you know, organic. It just sort of happened over time.
Yes.
Which I think is really neat.
Yes. And getting to know some remarkable priests and their remarkable character to me always was in, it wasn't a word I was using in my teens or 20s, but the word is authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
They were authentic.
Yeah.
They were genuinely compassionate, genuinely strong, genuinely confident, genuinely joyful, like no falsity.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, I found that so attractive.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that, I want that. How do I get that? And no phoniness.
See, that's a great point too, because, you know, I think all of us have seen, growing up in the faith, have seen, you know, some of those priests who unfortunately, you can kind of tell, maybe it feels like, you know, they're just sort of acting, or some of them maybe putting on a show. You know, it's not real often, but you see that sometimes. And I think that those who are more genuine and who are doing it for the right reasons, so to speak, like yourself, if they can see that, I think that really resonates with them. I mean, I think that's why you fit in so well is because a lot of people really, they like that. They like how genuine you are. You know, they like how you can talk to pretty much anybody, you know, and it's not, there is no sort of playing a role. There's nothing fake about it. You know, that's just who you are. You genuinely want to talk to these people. You genuinely want to know, how was your day? How was your game? How was, you know, whatever. And I think that really comes across. And I think people are realizing that, oh, hey, you know, this guy's the real deal.
Does that mean you're going to lift my probation soon?
We'll think about it.
Can I park closer to the church?
Right. Yeah, there you go. Your own parking space. Right. We'll bring that up.
Just closer. Yeah, just closer. Just closer. I'm not greedy.
Get a garage, maybe. Carport.
Right.
Right. We'll put that in some kind of committee request.
Love it. Love it. The next contract negotiation, okay?
There you go. There you go. Perfect. Well, this has been a lot of fun.
Awesome. Loved it, Brad, as, you know, I always do. Thank you.
No, for sure. I appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll do more of these interviews, you know, from time to time and kind of take the show in a slightly different direction. But until the next one, is there anything else that you would like to say or you would like to have listeners know about you before we conclude?
I'm just going to say that I'll take on retreat all of you who have listened to Casting the Net. I'm going to put you collectively as that group in a personal prayer list that I keep. And I'll just be praying for all of you in my time of retreat. That's one of the gifts of retreat, is not just for me to unplug, but for me to be more intentional with my own storming heaven on behalf of certain individuals and certain groups, and how grateful I am for all of you and knowing that God is doing great things through you.
Wonderful. Well said. I like it. All right. Well, thanks, Father Dave. We'll see everybody again next week here on Casting the Net.
Friends, he's Rick, and I'm Father Dave, a dad and a priest, together trying to become better fathers by catching Christian faith. Thanks for joining us for our conversation, and we hope that you'll connect with us next week for Casting the Net.